Tri-County Contracting, worry-free roofing, siding, and windows. To sign up for a free estimate, get info on their worry-free roof tune-up or their free yearly roof inspections, or to get an instant roof quote, visit them online at tricountycontractingwi.com.
And why would you interject yourself in that way? Now, on me is, you put it on social media, you're surprised people reacted? No,
right,
fair enough.
Right.
And also, I can take it. Like, I didn't lose sleep over it.
All night, you tossed and turned.
All night, I just couldn't. I'm like, yeah, I am a dumbass. That guy's right. I never should have done that.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, this is Wisconsin's Morning News. Here's Eric Bilstad and Vince Petrano.
8:12 on Wisconsin's Morning News this Tuesday morning. The proposal, free meals for all. Dr. Jill Underley is superintendent of public instruction for the state of Wisconsin. She has included in her proposed biennial budget request to the state nearly $300 million in state funds that would be spent providing breakfast and lunch to all public school students regardless of need. Dr. Underley joined WTMJ's Brian Noonan on Spanning the State Monday to make the case.
For a lot of kids in Wisconsin, and our survey shows 1 in 4 kids in high school, they don't know, you know, if they're going to be able to get their meal. And schools are filling that need.
So we'll get into the controversy here as I work through a series of statements that Dr. Underley made in her conversation with Noonan, acknowledging, as she said, 25% of high schoolers across the state reporting food insecurity, as it's often called. You have a question. I know you have a question. It is also my question. We are going to get to it. First, though, again, want to give you a little bit more from the state superintendent. Dr. Underley making the case for well-fed students being high-performing students.
The practice that we feed kids on days of assessments, like when we're doing our state tests, we're feeding kids breakfast. You know, when we do our ACT at school, we're giving kids breakfast and lunch. And why is that? Well, because we know that they can't concentrate and do their best on their exams if they're thinking about food.
So I got a lot of teachers in the family. My kids are in high school also. You've got high schoolers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you know that on the big test days, they activate like free breakfast, free lunch again for all?
I did not know that. And I don't know if the kids knew that either.
They do it just to make sure. So if for whatever reason, and this isn't need-based, if for whatever reason, if your family is just fine off economically, but some kid goes to school and didn't eat breakfast, they want to make sure that kid has a breakfast bar or something.
Need,
so there's something in the
need
tummy.
Need a good score on that test.
Exactly. Yeah. So when the stakes are high, that's what they do. If it's good, then why isn't that best practice always? Underley points out Wisconsin did do this during the pandemic as well.
The burden it took off me as a working mom to not have to run around in the morning and making sure that their lunches were packed and making sure that they were out the door. We got extra time together in the morning because I knew that if I got them to school, they would have breakfast. They'd be ready for their first period class. And then at lunch, you know, they every kid belongs.
So I said your question is my question. If we know it's a quarter of the students who have food insecurity, why don't we do a better job of taking care of that? Serving those who truly have need and make this a $75 million proposal instead of a $300 million proposal, buying breakfast and lunch for families that can otherwise afford it on their own. That's the question. And I admit I have a mixed reaction. So one of the things that Dr. Underley says, and then we'll get a little bit more into it, her answer to folks who have exactly that question is, well, there are a lot of things that we provide regardless of economic need in public education.
I don't call up a family and be like, hey, how much gas do you have in your tank before I pick your kid up on the school bus? Because I want to make sure that I'm only picking up kids whose parents can't take them to school. I mean, that's it. That's nonsense.
So that's her response to the question of, well, why aren't we doing this based solely on economic need? Another response that she had was, even those who do qualify, some families who may qualify economically, either do not or cannot, for a number of reasons, go through the necessary paperwork. They just don't. And so they are kids who might qualify for free and reduced lunch, which we already have in the state available for those based on economic need.
Right.
They know there are families who don't do that, and those kids then are put in a position where they're not able to eat when it could be there for them. So I've laid out for you all of her arguments for. I still have that lingering question for me as a taxpayer and as someone who can, you know, we can afford to feed our kids. I can afford to send them to school or to pay whatever it is for school lunch. And so I almost look at it like I wonder where the motivation is of why are we trying to buy things for people who don't need things to be bought for them?
The school bus analogy is interesting. However, I would say, you know what? We're struggling to find school bus drivers all the time. So we can't even get people to school on time sometimes. And there are buses that are shut down or not being used and routes that are combined and consolidated and kids getting to school late or getting home late or not getting to places because we don't have school bus drivers. So to suggest that those are one and the same, why don't we put more money toward that then and make sure that we actually have drivers that can get kids to school versus this? That would be one reaction to the school bus analogy.
Also, in terms of school funding, look around the state. How many communities are going to referendum to keep the lights on right now?
Right.
I mean, we're going to be well north, I would predict, and I have to look into it, but Madison's over $500 million in their referendum proposal alone. We've got to be over $1 billion in attempts for school districts across the state to raise taxes in order to perform, in many cases, basic functions, and others, they're building referenda and such. Can we afford to be buying lunch for people who can otherwise afford it for their children when we apparently can't even operate our school districts as is with all of these districts going to referendum saying we need more?
But then, you know, and then go back the other way. Then I'm sure there are times. I mean, I know you know it for sure because we've done stories on it. I know we've seen it up close, too. There are families that aren't eating. There are kids that may even have access to, or at least their family is affluent enough to provide meals that don't. There are kids that show up to school with a string cheese, and that's it. Like, that does happen. There are examples of that. So being able to provide an easier opportunity for people to get sustenance, I get it. I understand the thought.
It's an interesting counterpoint because economic need might not be the only need in that family. Just because you got money in the checkbook or in your checking account doesn't mean you got food in the fridge. Doesn't mean, one, that parents have done what you would expect them to do, make sure that kid is going to school having had breakfast, make sure the kid is going to school with a lunch or with lunch money. Also, what did you say the other day? Driving the kids to school, you got eighth graders walking around with no coat when it's 40 degrees.
Oh my gosh.
They have a coat, they just didn't wear it. So that kid's going to show up. So there might be food in the fridge. Your kid doesn't eat, right? So then they're going to school. They're challenged in learning because they just didn't for whatever reason. I guess that's another counterpoint.
And there's another fear too of like, you know, one of the things you think of is, okay, yeah, will that be wasted money and how much wasted food? You know what I mean? Like there's all these things kind of circulating around there. Ultimately, to expect this to pass the budget, I mean, the odds are low, right? That this would actually get through the final plan.
I believe it was proposed in the last budget cycle, and you have Republicans in charge of both the Senate and the Assembly, and it was cut out of the budget that last time. So depending on what we see on November 5th, whether or not there's a shift in control for either of those bodies, that might depend on what I have a hard time believing that Republicans would all of a sudden buy into all of the arguments just laid out.
It is an interesting debate because, I mean, even in counties that you would not expect it, there are a lot of food insecurities, believe it or not.
Well, I just mentioned I was the MC for Blessings in a Backpack, their annual gala, which serves students in need in Waukesha County and primarily the city of Waukesha. And it raises a lot of eyebrows right away. Like, Waukesha, that's a more affluent county. I would have expected this was somewhere else. And they say, you know, they have one school in the city of Waukesha where the principal was there and he said, the vast majority of his students are on free or reduced lunch. So it's already there. Again, it does beg a fair question of then why don't we do a better job of serving those students with that economic need, shore that up, which any compassionate person can say is money well spent, versus then buying food for kids who don't necessarily need it. The counter being, of course, if you know this gets results and you know better fed students are better educated and better performing students, does it not pay dividends down the road ultimately regardless?
Good point.
Can't figure out which way I come down.
I know. Yeah, you're right.
Good arguments on both sides. 8:21 on Wisconsin's Morning News. Man, like 32 hours in, still struggling.
You look better today.
Do I? Good, thank you. So I don't look like I got hit by a truck, which is what you said yesterday.
You had like tears in your eyes when I saw you.
I did not have tears in my eyes.
Eric, is that you?
I did not have labored breathing.
Come closer.
Come closer, yeah.
So I can see you.
Can you handle most of the show today? I had shared that I did the two banger. I had the COVID shot and the flu shot,
right.
One in each arm. Okay, yeah. I did it on Sunday. I was a little bit surprised that I didn't react super well and just shared on the program and on social media as well. Not a, you should also get the shot. Not a, you should not get the shot. Just one was sort of a self-deprecating, like I was kind of in rough shape and I was sort of making fun of myself. And then the other just sort of a, hey, if you're planning to do this, and I've heard this from other people as well, that for whatever reason, maybe it's because it's the combination or maybe it's the type of COVID shot that you're getting. I got the flu shot for years and never had any issues.
Right, right.
But for whatever reason, this put me down. And a lot of people are saying they're down for a pretty good day. My daughter missed school. Like she was not in good shape the day after, which we had not planned. So I shared it sort of, this is something that happened to me. If you're planning on getting both shots, like maybe plan for a day when the next day out even, you maybe don't have a big heavy day. It's the only reason I said it, right? So as you would expect on social media.
As expected.
Right. It was interesting, though. I got the wide gamut of reactions.
Okay.
Do you want to hear the negative first?
Yes.
A lot of it was vaccine-related. So I posted a picture of myself in one of my favorite sweatshirts, my cozy Johnson & Sons paving sweatshirt.
Oh, I'm pulling a partner into it, all right.
So I just said, like, yeah, needed the cozy sweatshirt today, still not feeling well. And I got so many nasty responses about vaccines, which I should have anticipated, right? One guy called me a dumbass for putting poison in my body. Also used the R word.
Oof,
like it was so extreme.
Easy.
And my response to that was, I didn't tell you to get it. What do you care? What do you care? And why would you interject yourself in that way? Now on me is you put it on social media. You're surprised people reacted. No,
right,
fair enough.
Right.
And also, I can take it. Like, I didn't lose sleep over it.
You toss and turn.
All night. I just couldn't. I'm like, yeah, I am a dumbass. That guy's right. I never should have done that. Right. I just thought it was interesting. There was a lot of anti-vax response. And again, if I were out there pushing and saying, you need to do this and everybody should be vaxxed and you're terrible if you don't, that would elicit, I would think, that pushback.
Sure.
But
yeah,
having
okay.
not done that, I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
The other side that I really didn't anticipate, nor was I looking for, because mostly I was making fun of myself, mm-hmm. still struggling mm-hmm. a little bit, was like folks said they were praying for me.
Oh, that's nice.
Prayers for a quick recovery. Like, I'm okay. Like,
you felt guilty receiving their prayers?
Yes, right.
No, not me.
I really want you to throw them up for somebody who super needs your help. And there right. are a lot of people who do.
Yes, yes.
Right? I'm okay. Now, as the devoutly religious will tell you, and I appreciate this from people that I've talked to over the years, of like, hey, look, prayers aren't a zero-sum game.
Right.
Plenty of prayers to go around.
Of course,
and if someone offers you some, then say thank you.
Yeah,
right. And
accept it. Yeah.
It's okay. A lot of prayers to be had. So I appreciate that. I just meant like I wasn't fishing for prayers or even really sympathy.
Isn't it interesting that your behavior is now at a point where many social media users will immediately feel the need or the obligation or the desire to post something, regardless of whether it's a support or it's you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But I got to write something back to him. Well, why?
As if every post is an elicitation
yes.
for a response.
Yes.
I'm hoping you respond to this.
You don't have to respond at all. Isn't that interesting how, because
yeah.
we do it too. There's times when, oh yeah, you write back something like, wait, why did I feel it necessary to do that?
Particularly in one extreme or another, right? I'm shocked all the time by people whom I don't know. And granted, we have forward-facing jobs, so
sure.
more people
yep.
know us than we know. But still, someone you don't know and you write horrible things to that person. Like, I just can't imagine like blowing up some kid who writes something. Right?
It is pretty amazing some of the stuff people
just
say.
Blowing like, people
wow.
up.
Like,
wow.
Call your mom.
Right? Jeez. Are you quite well?
Yeah, my goodness.
You don't want the vax? You need more than that. Something. 8:30 on Wisconsin's Morning News. I don't know if 3 years is a tradition.
What are you talking about? It's a tradition.
That which happens annually, twice only before, and now again. Is that a tradition?
Well, how many do you need?
At least 10.
10?
I want 10 years. No?
Okay.
Am I off on that?
That seems like a lot.
A tradition of excellence. You need several years More than two.
It's a tradition like none other. The annual Wisconsin's right. Morning News Halloween radio show returns on Thursday morning. We do it every year.
Yes, we do.
Every year in honor of those old-timey, scary Halloween radio shows, we put one together ourselves. And right now, Greg Pancake Hill is putting the finishing touches on ours, and it will run on Halloween morning.
So I had someone ask, I said, I remember when Jonathan Green did the Greenhouse, he used to play this old-timey Halloween show.
Yeah.
I said, yes. Instead of doing that, what Eric decided to do, starting this new tradition, was to, in the spirit of an old-timey Halloween show, yeah. write our own. So each year we would have a different mm-hmm. one. The debut, the premiere was The Smoke.
Right, yes.
In 2022.
And this year it's called Solomon's Shovel. And Greg shared us a little teaser. You want to hear a little tiny yes. little piece of audio?
Yes. Did the lights just flicker? Come on, guys.
I didn't do anything.
It wasn't me.
Somebody else decided to tag along with us today? I thought I told you guys. Mercure and Fellow, not invited. Wisconsin's Morning News only.
Ooh. Ooh. Stay tuned for Solomon's
Shovel. That's
all
you're going to share today?
Well, yeah, just a little piece.
That reveals nothing about the plot or even like what's happening.
Would you like to share the whole thing?
I don't want to share any of it. All right, man. I'm sorry to be such a wet blanket. That's fine. I Eric gets so excited about it. He spends a lot of time writing these pieces. That's he asks for input.
Hold on. Like, you know what that suggests?
Greg
like
enjoys editing them.
It's an eight-month process or something like that. But
you're
anyway,
already working on next year.
The debut will be Thursday morning right here on Wisconsin's Morning News.
Not to be missed. 8:41.
Thanks.
See what you did there.
So the election, 1 week from today, 46 million Americans have already cast a ballot. You done yours yet?
I have not. And I hadn't. I told you I intended to early vote or in-person absentee yeah. vote. Just haven't.
New concerns now this morning about election security. This after ballot boxes out west were lit on fire.
Officers in Vancouver, Washington, pulling out ballots still burning. Officials say hundreds were lost. And in nearby Portland, another fire.
Engine 21 respond to investigate. An unknown flammable object being put inside of a drop box.
Officials credit fire suppressant in that box for saving 409 ballots. Only three were damaged.
ABC's Lana Moise. Yeah, they have these fire suppression systems, so a chemical gets released from a sensor, and then that gets sprayed over everything, so that kills the fire. Not sure what it does to the ballots, though, but it sounds like most of them, in that case, were protected. These fires about 20 minutes apart from each other.
Police and the FBI don't know yet if the two fires inside ballot boxes were politically motivated, but Mike Benner with Portland Police saying,
we believe the incident here is connected to the two incidents in Vancouver.
And they've now identified a suspect vehicle connected to the fires. A few ballots were damaged in Portland, many more in Vancouver. Alex Stone, EBC News.
So this comes as Homeland Security officials have now issued a new bulletin. They're warning that domestic violent extremists are posting online threats right now, they have been, of violence toward election officials or infrastructure to prevent perceived fraud or to retaliate against it. So that's the concern now. So they are beefing up security. Washington, they already have patrols beefed up in some areas. You wonder what the motivation was here, if it was to actually stop ballots from being counted, or was it to sow chaos? Or is it to lay the seed for other copycatters? I mean, who knows? Right now, all they're looking for is a Volvo. They feel like they have the suspect's vehicle, but that's it.
Could also be someone who wants to simply sow doubt in the integrity of
yes.
the drop boxes.
Yes, attack
so somebody
the integrity,
who is anti-drop box.
Right.
So look, if this can happen to the drop box, then mm-hmm. just like we've been saying, it's not secure.
And you expect already that there's going to be all kinds of lawsuits. I mean, that's fully anticipated following the election. You know, does this play a role into that even, where lawsuits would use these for whatever purpose, not suggesting there's a connection between the two, but would that be used to give, I don't know, another opportunity to present, well, this is why we have to challenge this ruling because of that and those and this.
There's that piece of political news today. And also, maybe it's just because we're interested in the quote-unquote journalism in covering elections and whatnot. But I think this decision by the Washington Post, and really the owner of the Washington Post, to not publish an endorsement in this upcoming election is a fascinating one.
The LA Times was going to endorse Kamala Harris. The editorial board for the Times was going to, and they are not doing that now because the owner of the Times said, nope, we're not going to have an endorsement. Now, Jeff Bezos is being criticized for a controversial decision to not run an endorsement for the Washington Post. That's the paper that he owns, and he's speaking out about it now. So Bezos posted on the paper's website on Monday that he says, presidential endorsements do nothing to tip the scales of an election. No undecided voters in Pennsylvania are going to say, I'm going with newspaper A's endorsement. None. What presidential endorsements actually do is create a perception of bias, a perception of non-independence. Ending them is a principled decision, and it's the right one. That's what he wrote on Monday. This after being highly criticized by many, including some editors and columnists from his own paper, for pulling the plug on an endorsement that was anticipated, according to reports, to be for Kamala Harris.
I support the decision. Now, I think it's ill-timed.
Right.
It would have been a far easier case to make a year ago, before everybody already knew who you were going to endorse. On that note, it's not like anybody suspected that the Washington Post was going to come out in favor of former President Trump anyway.
It'd be a bigger story if that were the case.
Kind of makes his point of like, yeah, and now the news, right?
Right.
But if a year ago he had said, we're just getting out of this business, I would support that. And as someone, you know, granted, we get to share a few more opinions here in what we do on this show. But when I was anchoring the news at Channel 4, I took very seriously the idea that we were supposed to be down the middle. If there's that perception of bias, and in print, if it's like, well, no, our editorial department is separate. They're down the hall. They don't even talk to our reporters. I mean, like, come on now. So how can you try to sell to people that you are an unbiased source of news if, meanwhile, the group of editorial writers gets together and endorses a candidate? I agree with him there.
Speaking of perception, one editor involved in the Post who was upset about this process said the decision to not run the endorsement came on the same day the CEO of Blue Origin, which is a company owned by Bezos, had met with Donald Trump in Texas, which showed the perception that a deal had been made or a quid pro quo or something not to run an endorsement. And Bezos says, oh, come on. That's, you know, that I sighed when I found that out. That's not the case. But it clearly happened that way, where there was some type of meeting. And then on that same day, a decision was made. So both things can be true. You can say, look, we didn't want to do this, but also it can have been a clunky rollout as well. To do it on that day raises a lot of eyebrows. And it actually lost a lot of subscribers, too. NPR reporting that more than 200,000 people have canceled their subscriptions to the Post following that announcement.
I don't know that you need to do that either. If you value the reporting in the Post and it speaks to some reason that you had that subscription, I don't know that any of that changes. I suppose it's a way to protest that decision with which you disagree. But it's hard to get stuff from the Post if you haven't paid for it.
Like, yeah, there's
firewall on a lot of things.
You're right.
If you see it in your social media feed, Washington Post, you know, links to a headline, you click on there, it's like, here are your subscription options. So for those folks who value that, that would be a shame. You're depriving yourself of the information and something you value. But I understand that would be sort of a protest vote. And I wouldn't be surprised to see more of that, more and more publications getting out of the business of actually endorsing. And I think
for fear of... it's a lot of it could be blowback. There's fear of losing more readers by actually endorsing because you're essentially potentially cutting off 50% of your audience.
And I think nothing wrong with having your columnists have a take or writing various editorials without a quote-unquote endorsement. I think those are widely read, maybe more than the other stuff. You have a personality, a writer whom you like, and you want to know what he or she thinks about things, that's fine. A lot of people like that, and you provide a service and perspective. I just wonder if the publication's endorsement of candidate A, B, or C is a thing of the past. 852 on Wisconsin's Morning News.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee. From the Annex Wealth Management Studios, this is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
WTMJ forecast sponsored by Dave Dre Camp Heating, where your comfort is their family's tradition. Partly cloudy today. Storm Team 4 Chief Meteorologist Brian Nisnansky predicting a record high of 81. Some of that's Niz just going, Yeah, might as
sure,
well.
Sure, let's go for 81. It.
That is the record for this date. Things will cool off by Thursday. Thursday's high just 65.
No more wind chill warnings. No more wind chill warnings. They'll never happen again. Not because it won't be that cold sometime, but they're changing. The National Weather Service has changed it now. So instead of a wind chill warning, which is when you have 35 below wind chills, it's now going to be called extreme cold warning for when things are 30 below. So it ticks
and
up.
And that's either air temperature or with the wind chill mixed in.
And the idea being, I guess, if there's no wind that day but still super cold, they want to be able to call it a extreme cold warning. So we asked Brian about it, and Niz kind of said he's sure, but he doesn't understand what the point is.
I'm not part of this decision. I respect the people who make the decision. I just kind of wish I knew a little bit more why. And I hope that it's more than someone who had just this brilliant idea. You know, we've all worked in these workplaces where, oh, big idea, right? You know?
I don't know what you're talking about. Everywhere I've worked, nothing but good ideas. Including here. And we'll leave it at
that. I was going to say, I'm not going to react to that comment. Go ahead.
858.
What are you referring to?
WTMJ Political Power Hour with Steve Scafidi up next.